Succession number 27188, Reel 1.
Major Eidhammer, Reel 1. Can you tell me, is there a tradition of military service in your family?
In a way it is, because my father is a minister and he was serving half a year in Gaza in the 60s.
Was your father a priest in the military or a soldier?
My father was a minister and he was serving in the military for half a year in Gaza. In a UN operation.
So there is a tradition of going to church?
In my family it is a tradition, yes, it is.
When was it that you decided you wanted to be a Feldpriest, a military chaplain?
I was doing my service before I starting to study. So in the end of my studies, I find out that I would try to also to be a chaplain for some period.
What was it particularly that appealed to you about the idea of being a priest and in the army or in the navy?
I think there was the idea of being a minister for a group and together also have a kind of education. I was planning maybe to have work as a teacher for some years. So in the military I could use both.
Use all your skills at the same time?
Yes, that was
Were you thinking of the role of the chaplain as being that of a teacher? Was that part of the idea?
In Norway it is, because the chaplains have the responsibilities for the education in ethics, also on a low level, like now in the military academy also.
What is the most important aspect of the chaplain's role, do you think? Is it to be a teacher in the field of ethics? Is it to be a source of comfort to the troubled? Is it to be a mediator between the soldier and God? Where is the main responsibility for the chaplain?
The main responsibility is definitely to be a chaplain, to have this religious dimension. So even here, I think that's the most important.
Do chaplains in Norway have a function with regard to family matters and welfare? Is that part of their role?
Yes, it is. It can be different from unit to unit, but normally we have a part in the welfare, also in personal questions.
When you were serving as a soldier, when you were in the Air Defence Battalion in Andøya, did you find that the other conscripts had an interest in religious matters?
Some of them, yes.
Would you have any idea of roughly what proportion of them were had a religious...
I think that was like in the society it's very hard to say in how many, but not so very high percent. It's not so very many.
Do you think, have you felt that in society generally, society is becoming more secular and less interested in ethical and spiritual questions?
I think it's both. They are more individual, but still occupied with the same questions. I don't think they listen so much to what the church say, but very occupied with the questions. I think so.
I know that in France, the military chaplains regard themselves as being on a mission, because they think that France is no longer a Christian country, and it is as if they had been sent into a pagan country to convert it back.
Yes, maybe, but I think we have the same situation in the military like we have outside. But in the military, maybe the tradition is more steady. So, in a way, I think it's easier to have, like we have communion in the fields, we are working very much with that. Things like that. It might be easier to take back in the military.
When you decided to become a military chaplain, what did you have to do in order to become one? What was the process? Which
in Norway, it's normal that a person who have studied the theology have their conscriptions, like doctors and lawyers and things like that, that 1 year, like a chaplain. But I had my conscriptions before my study, so I needed to take an officer's course, and then I could start. It's about 1 month or 5 weeks.
What were the subjects you were taught in that officer's course?
We had some military subjects. And we were occupied with the chaplain's role. Also services, comfort, pastoral care, teaching ethics, things like that.
How were you taught? Were you taught mainly by lecture, or were you taught by seminar, or were you taught by practical exercises?
I think all of them. Also practical. We had to have a lesson for normal soldiers during the course.
So you had to go and teach soldiers?
Yes.
What do you remember what it was you had to teach them?
I don't remember what, but we were on a boat in Bergen.
You were teaching sailors?
Yes, I was.
Your first appointment in the Navy, Coastal Defence, what was that? Was that in a fortress or a barracks?
It was a fortress, but at the same time I had the responsibility to join some ships like coast guards and for some weeks during the year. But normally I was at this fortress.
And what was your normal routine daily work in the fortress? What would you be doing day by day?
It was a lot of talks with soldiers about welfare, about their situations, pastoral care.
So soldiers coming to you to discuss personal and family matters. Were you able to resolve their difficulties usually?
I was discussing with them and we also have this group for these matters. So we were coming together and discussing with the doctors and officers. So it was possible to have to influence on that, yes.
Do you think that the fact that you were an officer was an advantage or a disadvantage when you were dealing with the sailors?
I think in the system it's both. It's a disadvantage for maybe for some soldiers, but
you were saying that there were advantages and disadvantages to being an officer.
Yes. I think in the military system it is an advantage to be an officer, because it's easier to get in contact with and be listened to by other officers. So in that way I think it's best. And I think that's the reason why Norwegian chaplains still have ranks, because it's functional.
What about your functions as a priest and dealing with the soldiers? Does it help with that?
No, it doesn't help with that. But I don't think it's... my experience is that in the beginning, maybe the first days, with the new soldiers, it is... kind of difficult. But then I start to know the system and to know my role, it doesn't matter.
So do they forget that you're an officer eventually?
I guess so, yes.
When you moved to the army, I think you were at Lillehammer with the signals, that the Jørstadmoen.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you find that there were any differences between the two services? You've been with the Navy, and then you joined the Army.
Mm.
Was there any significant difference in the way in which you carried out your work, or the way in which...
In many ways, my work was the same. But the first place was in the northern Norway.
Yes.
And a lot of soldiers was far away from home. So that influenced a lot in my work.
Did that create a lot of difficulties for family matters with soldiers?
It's a lot of difficulties for the soldiers, because they didn't, they were far away from their families and from their girlfriends, wives, and so on. At Jørstadmoen, this was easier, of course. But it is a much bigger camp, and it is cultural differences between the Navy and the Army, that's for sure.
What are those? What are the cultural differences?
The Army is maybe more strict in many ways. I think the Navy is more, if I can say, kind of more civilian in the way they appear. But my work was not so much influenced by that. I was working even more with soldiers' matters, because there's a lot of soldiers coming in every third month.
They were coming in for training?
Yes. Mm. And they also have school for new officers, an engineer school, so it was more education also.
Does this mean that you spent more time teaching ethics?
Yes, for sure.
Did the soldiers have classes in ethics?
Yes, the soldier had, I think, about I didn't remember how many, but the soldiers, I had lessons for soldiers, for and officers.
When you were teaching the soldiers, how many soldiers would you have at a time?
In some of the units, it could be 20 to 30. In some other places, maybe 60.
That's an awful lot of men to teach all at one go.
Yes, it is.
But, what technique did you use to instruct them? Did you use formal lectures, or were you conducting discussions? What was the best way of getting your ideas across?
The best way was discussions, but of course very hard when it was a lot of people. So to have a lecture, maybe with some dilemmas, and then discussions afterwards.
You mentioned dilemmas. These presumably were to illustrate the principles. You lay down the basic ideas, and then what sort of principles were you focusing on when you were teaching ethics? What was the main subject matter of your classes?
It was some moral principles, but mostly kind of more practical. The teaching about like the Geneva Convention and why being in the military, kind of military ethics, or and the big discussions about peace and war.
Well, you mentioned the Geneva Convention, which really governs the laws of war, doesn't it? I mean, it's
yes.
Concerning how you treat the enemy, particularly when they're prisoners or wounded. And, were you referring back to the principles of the just war, the principles mentioned by St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas?
I was referring to them,
yeah.
But and the principles.
Mm.
But for the private soldiers, I didn't go so deep into them.
Did you find that there were private soldiers who had background knowledge in this field? Were they?
They did know something about the international law and Geneva Convention, but maybe not so much directly.
Were they interested in these matters? Was it something that attracted their attention? Did you get a lot of, you know, when you're given a lecture to a large audience of soldiers, did you get a lot of questions exploring the subject in more depth?
It changed, of course, with class it was. It could be very different. But in some of these lectures, we used movies and different things. So I guess I got their attention in some ways.
What sort of movies were you using? Do you remember any of the titles?
For instance, we used one, in fact, Danish movie about Geneva Convention.
Was this film made for the purpose?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Hmm. What about the officers? How did you teach them? Did you have them in the same sort of class sizes, or did you have them in a smaller sort of group?
For this, they were in classes, like about 20. And we did have a lot of the same matters. But more details. We were discussing more questions to be an officer.
Did they have a better background knowledge?
Not necessarily.
Do you think that they had a higher level of interest in these matters than the soldiers? Or was it about the same, or?
Higher level of interest, in average, anyway.
And then you came to here, to the Military Academy, as a chaplain and instructor in ethics. Now, was that a double appointment, or were you covering two jobs?
Maybe it is a kind of two jobs, but we have this tradition in Norway that the chaplain is doing taking part in the ethics. It is a kind of two jobs, but still, it's a lot of the same things. So. In my ethics, I also have subjects like treating with accidents, especially in international services.
So you're thinking about incidents and all sorts of tricky...
Yes. Oh. Like if you lose... comrade or friend or soldier when you're out, what kind of things can we prepare for instance?
How do you prepare yourself for possibly losing a soldier? What can you do in advance when you're going into a dangerous location?
I think maybe the most important task for the chaplain is to prepare so he know the routines, even if he is not responsible for that. It is important for the chaplain to know what is actually happening for all involved parts in that. And I think it's very important for the chaplain to prepare himself to what he will do in these things, all from contact with the soldiers, ceremonies, debriefing eventually, and things like that.
How can the chaplain prepare himself? What can he do before he goes to such a place the first time to make himself ready?
I think the chaplain has to know, like I said before, the routines like this, and he have to prepare himself to be asked questions what they should do if things like this are happening. So he need to have knowledge about what everyone should do in these cases, I guess.
Where does he get that information from? Are there handbooks in the army, or does he have to go and ask experienced chaplains who've been there before him? What are the sources of the knowledge and wisdom you need?
The unit in Norway, we have a chaplain who is responsible for this to making these routines. So we have a kind of system for that. So he will we just have to talk with them and to get the knowledge about this. But especially about what is possible to do for the soldiers at this moment.
What can you do for the soldiers at that moment?
For instance, having memorial services, lighting candles with pictures. It's a lot of small things, talking with soldiers, giving advices for the officers. Just being there maybe is the most important thing. That's my experience anyway, also in Norway and abroad, that the chaplain's most useful thing is just to be there.
Be a presence.
Yes. Mm. Because in a funny way, it's like if the chaplain is among them, with them, they feel more confident. So the presence is maybe the most important thing.
Before you went to Tuzla in Bosnia, did you have any special training for yourself?
We had some weeks together with this new unit.
The logistic battalion?
Yes. So I guess it was about 4 weeks or something. We were coming together from a lot of different units, and also a lot of them working like civilian normally. And I have also discussion with the chaplaincy about chaplain's matters.
Yes. What sort of chaplain's matters were being discussed then when you had your discussions?
For instance, routine with after kind of accidents.
Yes.
And this, having services more also a lot of like of religious and cultural knowledge. So in many ways the chaplain also have the kind of responsible for to deal with the cultural aspects.
So what did you know about before you went then? Did you know about the political situation in Bosnia? Were you fully briefed on the different religious communities existing in that territory and their relations with each other? So to what extent did you know what was going on before you arrived?
Quite a lot, I guess, because we were briefed in the different things, and I was reading books, talking with people, also with chaplains who had been there before. So I had, in any case, some knowledge about that.
What was that derived from? Was that from reading earlier on, or from studying the newspapers, or from other sources? Where did you get that background knowledge?
From different sources, reading books mostly, talking with persons, especially chaplains who had been there before. And they had briefs altogether.
Who gave you the briefs? Did you have any briefs from the Foreign Ministry, or was it all through the army and the chaplains?
It was from, for instance, university personnel, professors, and the intelligence officers.
Were you well prepared when you went to Tuzla?
Yes, I think so.
Did anybody in the logistic battalion have any doubts about the ethical nature of what you were going to be doing when you were there? Was there anyone who was not sure that you were doing the right thing?
Before going there?
Before going there.
I think to have a chaplain, it's very much a tradition in Norway. But in many cases, there were chaplains with a lot of civilian background who hadn't been working in the military before they went out. So I think in my situation, they appreciate that I had been working in the military before, like a military chaplain.
Yes.
So that was an advantage for me.
But amongst the soldiers in the logistic battalion, were they all volunteers?
Yes.
They were. And they were all quite clear that what they were doing was the right thing to do.